Now, this is Box to Box with Michael Edgley and Willem van Denderen.
Oh, what a goal!
For Chemist Warehouse.
Great savings every day.
And Hoyt's Herbs and Spices.
Changing the mood of food.
Absolutely fantastic!
Hello and welcome to Box, the show that is everything football. With Rob Gilbert on the bench, you're with Willem van Denderen and Michael Edgley to run the rule over the past week in the World Game. First edition news shortly, and of course throughout the show we'll be joined by our former ITN journo turned pundit, Derek Dyson. We hope you've all had a lovely Easter. Melbourne City most certainly did. They leapfrogged Sydney FC on the final day of the A-League women's season to claim the Premier's plate as the Sky Blues capitulated to a victory side that will hit the finals running. Plenty to review and even more to look ahead to as the finals looms. We'll be joined by Forecap Matilda, former Western Sydney Wanderers manager and now Dub Zone regular, Kath Cannulli. Abroad, all eyes were on Manchester as City hosted Arsenal, with both sides knowing only a win would see them keep pace with Liverpool atop the Premier League table. A stalemate does neither any favours, but there's still much to play out. We'll welcome back the Guardians' Jamie Jackson, who was at the Etihad. We'll round out with World Cup corner, more chaos in APL land, which we'll get to shortly. But before we do, Edge, welcome in, my friend, in Bangkok. Your takeaways from the week's football?
Oh, what a fantastic weekend of football it was, and I was glued to the final round of the A-League women's competition. I couldn't look away. Sydney FC collapsed. They had it all to play for, a Premier's plate, and Melbourne City, in the last match of the season, got over the line in the last minutes of that game to snatch the Premier's plate. But what about Newcastle and Melbourne victory? They're storming into the finals. I can't wait to talk to Kath Cannulli, get all her analysis as we prepare for what's going to be an epic final series.
You had the Jets women as your team of the week in stoppage time last week. Could they be the team of the month going forward? We'll get into that.
We'll certainly get into that. They inflicted Adelaide's worst ever loss in the history of the A-League women's competition. They were incredibly dominant and all with a 17-year-old goalkeeper who's only about 5 foot five, and she got the job done. She actually made some fantastic saves. And we'll talk about her with Kath Cannulli as well.
Eight in the onion bag against Adelaide, goodness me. Derek, another week, another couple of big storylines on the Arsenal front, both men's and women's. What did you make of the past 7 days of football?
Oh, look, if I'm being honest, I'm just glad it's over from an Arsenal point of view. The build-up was pretty intense, and a lot of people calling this a title decider, which of course it wasn't. You know, it, obviously a key game for both sides, but win, lose or draw, neither side was going to be out of it. But I think we just saw a continuation in the Arsenal-Man City game of where they left off at the Emirates, the game that I was privileged enough to go to earlier in the season. Very tight chess match type affair. So Liverpool will be the happiest, of course. And look, just fascinating Premier League and European football scores across the board. So plenty to dig into in this show.
We'll roll into the news. Melbourne City have jumped in FC on the final day of the A-League women's season to win their third Premier's plate. 15-year-old Shelby McMahon, Junior Matilda's captain, scored her first senior goal at a fair old time to do so, which proved to be the difference in their 2-1 win over Perth.
Garlich biding her time. Here comes McMahon, the 15-year-old. Works through two, has a shot on. McMahon, it's his goal! Oh my goodness, Shelby McMahon! Her first goal of Liberty Women's A-League, and that just about seals it. Melbourne City women are about to be 2023 Premiers.
And so it proved as we look towards the finals. Victory's win sets up an elimination meeting against the Mariners in Gosford, while Western United will meet the Newcastle Jets, who stormed into the finals, as we touched on, with a monster win over the Reds. So we will get granular shortly, Edge, with Kath Cannulli. But yeah, a corking final round, storylines all over the place. And in the end, it's the Wanderers who are looking for just their second finals appearance, who were squeezed out on the final day.
Yes, Wellington Phoenix did the job over the Wanderers, and that Melbourne victory Central Coast Mariners match is actually going to be at the home of the Matildas in Melbourne, Willem. So Melbourne victory get a home final after jumping into fourth spot on the table. Yeah, the Western City Wanderers, they really didn't give a yelp over in Wellington. It was playing at that field where they've played only three or four matches, Wellington. It was very, very windy, and Wellington took the advantage of a howling breeze in the first half to get in front, and Western Sydney couldn't, despite having a lot of possession in the second half, they went down to Wellington and had to watch Sydney capitulate and their finals hopes go up in flames. But what about Melbourne City? They just absolutely hung in there all year. When you look at their squad, you know, I think off the top of your head, all the pundits had them not as powerful as Melbourne Victory, not as powerful as Western United, or even maybe behind Sydney FC, but they absolutely just got the job done. Dario Vidicic and his team up there, Melissa Barbieri as well, and the young players, and that 15-year-old, Shelby McMahon, who they've picked up recently. What a goal to win the Premier's Plate. So Melbourne City, huge congratulations to them. As they say in the classics, they made every post a winner. Willem?
They did. It seems a little while ago now, but the Socceroos have advanced to the third and maybe their final round of World Cup qualifying with two games to spare. Their 5-0 win over Lebanon in Canberra saw first international goals for John Iredale and Cassini Yenge, debuts for Josh Nisbet and Patrick Yazbek, but the night undoubtedly belonged to the red-hot Craig Goodwin.
Nathan Frustic races away. He's got options right and left. A little scoop over the top for Craig Goodwin. And he fires it in. That's a glorious goal. Befitting of a really good performance by Craig Goodwin on his return to the team after illness. What a hit.
Edge, a quick word on Craig, one of your favourites. Two goals, one and a half, or two assists if you want to be generous. He's in remarkable touch. If you want to look back, it's a shame that his goal against South Korea wasn't the winner at the Asian Cup and won't be remembered as fondly as his one against France at the World Cup, or indeed this one against Lebanon on the left.
He just keeps scoring. He is an elite performer for the Socceroos now. He's extremely important. He has that left wing position for as long as he wants it. I think he just keeps getting better. We just saw his step in class compared to the other players on the field. He was superb. He makes every possession count. He makes good decisions. He reads the play superbly, and Australia would not be as good without him. We saw that he was the difference. He was involved in three goals on the weekend, and Thursday, I should say. And Craig Goodwin is an elite performer for the Socceroos. We should celebrate him, and he's a lovely man with a fantastic family.
And a shout out before we move on to Rob Gilbert's niece, Larice, who carries her grandmother's name and was one of the flag bearers as the two sides came out onto the pitch in Canberra. So a proud night for the Gilbert family and their Lebanese roots. To our weekly APL mayhem segment, or story rather, they have agreed a deal with production company NEP to broadcast the remainder of this season's matches after previous partner Global Advance entered administration last week. The APL entered partnership with then startup GA in 2021. The governing body is believed to be roughly $1 million out of pocket, having paid advanced costs following its demise. They've stated they've been let down and will be seeking to recoup the monies outlaid. Derek, this is the industry in which you work, and although in poor circumstances and with some financial loss, it could be argued maybe that they've dodged a bit of a bullet here in getting away from this sort of flailing new company into something stronger such as NEP. But what would your sort of general comments be around the just this industry and what goes on when we as football fans turn the TV on and see the game? Obviously there's a lot that's gone in prior.
I think it illustrates that the whole broadcast ecosystem around the A-League is just on a knife edge. They just have just enough money that comes in from advertising that helps pay for a pretty sort of limited and underwhelming broadcast product that they put out. The players, like as in like the video players that we've seen, the technology isn't particularly good. We've seen other things fall over, like the website keep up as well. So that clearly was, a loss-making venture as well. And look, big broadcasting is under, like a lot of businesses around Australia, around the world, is under a lot of stress at the moment because of the state of the economy, because of deflated advertising market. Channel 9 the other day announced they were 26% down on the first quarter, which is, a horrendous financial result. And then that trickles through into these production businesses. Channel 10 is in no better state. Production companies are used to working with the skinniest, thinnest of margins. This startup, and I don't know a lot about it, probably thought they could make it work, probably thought that they could take it on, get the cash in the door. But ultimately, it hasn't worked. And yes, someone like NEP coming in is a very safe set of hands. We don't know the financial arrangement around that. But I think it just illustrates to me a very fragile ecosystem, Edge, that isn't too far away from collapsing at any one time.
Now, I watch it very closely, and I picked up on the weekend, Derek, that it seemed to me that the coverage was better under the NEP arrangements. And I did hear on the grapevine that there's been some very experienced directors have been plying their trade over the weekend for the A-League. So if you haven't watched the A-League for a while, whether that's the A-League women's or men's, get on and watch it now, because I hear that the NEP resources and the resource base is a lot more experienced than was going before it. So we might actually get a little bit better of content or quality of content. But I'm with you, Derek. Everything's done on a shoestring, and it is held together by the barest of margins, and that comes through in the quality of the broadcast product, doesn't it, Derek? It is nowhere near as good as the other rival codes in Australia, NRL and AFL.
No, absolutely not. I mean, yes, we all want it to be a better product. It's kind of how would I describe this? Kind of a double-edged sword, really. Like, how do you get more fans to watch the game if the product isn't very good? But you know, without the fans watching the game, they can't pay for the product to be better. So, yeah, it's hard. But, yeah, when you compare it to AFL, you compare it to NRL, cricket, basketball, even has got a really good broadcast package. So, yeah, it's disappointing.
To sort of step into an area I don't really know much about, I think maybe, Derek, our quality of internet and streaming isn't as good in Australia, because if you stream Paramount Plus or if you stream Optus Sport, it can look a little bit poorly. Whereas they show the A-League in the UK on TNT Sports, and it looks crisp. It looks exactly how the old Fox Sports broadcast used to look, like really proper frame rate, and looks immaculate. It looks a lot better than how it looks when I watch it on my TV in Melbourne. Anyway, moving along, we'll head abroad. Bayern Munich manager Thomas Tuchel has congratulated Bayer Leverkusen on their impending Bundesliga title following his side's 2-0 loss to Dortmund. Sitting 13 points in arrears with 7 to play, Tuchel said, "There is no more need to count points. How many is it now? Congratulations, Leverkusen." Earlier in the week, Leverkusen manager Xavi Alonso announced he'll stay at the club next season and that his work there is not done, Derek, which means Liverpool still need to find a manager for next season. While on Sunday, Klopp and Roberto De Zerbi were having a cuddle on the sideline, with Klopp saying that De Zerbi should keep turning the football world upside down. Would you now have him in the premium seat?
Yeah, and Klopp should have smuggled De Zerbi underneath his big puffer jacket, I reckon, and got him back into the manager's office to sign a contract. Because, yeah, that has scuppered Liverpool's and Bayern Munich's plans for their next manager. I've selected this as a stoppage time topic so we can maybe rake over the coals in more detail. But, certainly it's the Leverkusen spell is going to end. There's no way that they can implode from here, and they pulled another one out of the fire. They're very good at coming back from behind. It reminds me a little bit of Arsenal invincibles, because they did the same thing time and time again throughout the season, and they are still invincible at the moment. So yeah, whether or not they get to the end of the season will be fascinating to see. And yeah, Tuchel's obviously just imploded under Bayern Munich. He's been, his job's over. It's got nothing left to play for, and it's just been a capitulation, very un-Bayern-like. There's a lot of work to do in Bavaria to get back to where they need to be for next season.
Socceroos and Matilda Central for the Green and Gold Army. The clocks have gone forward in Europe. Summer is firing up, and the Matildas will be in France this July. So now is the time to make sure you're in the stands, and it couldn't be easier. Head to ggatravel.com.au. There are a couple of concerning injuries around the traps. Ed just got the gossip on those. We will hold that until World Cup Corner at the end of the show, so stay tuned. But before the end of this segment, we will have a look at Arsenal's 1-0 win over Chelsea, which sees them retain the League Cup. All three Aussies coming off the bench, Steph Catley, Caitlin Ford during normal time, and then Kyra Cooney-Cross introduced in extra time to lift her first trophy with the club. St. Pauli still 5 clear in the Bundesliga, 2-1 winners over Paderborn. now with just 7 to play for Jackson Irvine and Connor Metcalf. Further down the league, John Iredale came off the bench for Vane Wiesbaden, but couldn't hit the net as they lost 1-0. And in the Dutch Eredivisie, good news as Odin Rustic started for Heracles after being kicked off the park against Lebanon, so it looks like a major injury avoided there. And in Japan to close, Mitch Duke came off the bench in another win for Mashita Zelvia. They sit top edge after 5 games in their maiden top flight season.
Yeah, amazing. Scott McIntyre, who we speak to from time to time on Box the Box from the Asian Games podcast, predicted that they would be very competitive, and it seems to be that as well. But and a shout-out to Matt Ryan, Socceroos goalkeeper, who had his 11th clean sheet on the weekend with him.
Yeah, AZ Alkmaar, they're pretty comfortably fourth, I think, and they're historically not a top team, but over the past 10 years or so, or last 15 years since Brett Holman won the league with them there, they are sort of in the modern five, if you like. Stick around, Kath Kanouli, to discuss the A-League Women's on the other side.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse. Great savings every day. And Hoyt's Herbs and Spices. Changing the mood of food.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
The final series of the A-League women's season is upon us, but it feels indulgent to think that we could have any more drama in store, given the incredible final day of action that saw Melbourne City lift the Premier's plate. Four-time Matilda, Kath Kanouli knows the league intimately as a former player, manager, and now broadcaster, and it's our pleasure to welcome her to Box for the first time. Welcome, Kath.
Thank you, guys. Pleasure to be here.
Top spot was described by Teo Pelizzeri on Dubzone this week, Kath, as a poison chalice, and so it proved right up until the death. 6 weeks ago, Western United looked odds on before Sydney seemed to sort of click into their normal end of season form, and that looked, you know, pretty much unbackable. But they capitulated terribly over the past week with losses to Canberra and the victory. How do you surmise that collapse? What's going on there?
It's been unbelievable, the finish to this season. I'm quite surreal, to be honest, to see where we were about 4 weeks ago and to see the change and how the team's finished up and the top six ended up was just unbelievable. And it's a credit to the league and how exciting it is. And no one would have picked this top six, not even Teo Pelizzeri. He was close, but he wasn't close enough.
Kath, let's just go through this step by step. First of all, the Premier's plate. Melbourne City, on paper, I didn't think their squad was worthy of winning the title, so to speak, but they hung in there and got results right through the season. Can you just tell us about that program, Dario Vidicic and the core group of players there, who are a young team? It's a pretty good achievement, that one, isn't it?
Absolutely, and his first year in charge as the head coach as well, taking over from his father. It was never going to be an easy job to be able to win that premiership, but they stuck to their guns. They stuck to their philosophy in the way that they want to play football. They love playing out from the back. I think they recorded over 11,000 passes this season and over an 80% accuracy as well. And some people didn't like, you know, the style of what they did and how they did it. But I think they had a good balance in their squad. I think at one point when they did lose Caitlin Torpy and also the goalkeeper Prue, who took off for a record fee to the NWSL, I think people thought that the wheels were going to fall off there. And they did lose a couple of games there and they did struggle a little bit, but they found their feet again, which was great. And then they made that signing with Barbara, the 35-year-old from Brazil as well, which was a massive signing for them. But they hung in there, and the way the season ended and the yo-yo and the way the table happened, everything just sort of fell in their favour. And in the end, they left until the very last game against Perth. And again, Perth didn't make it easy for them yesterday either. But I think their style of football was great. And I think also Holly McNamara was a big loss for them. But credit to Dario and the whole team and the City group as well, who continuously invest in their female squad.
And fan favourite and skipper, Rebecca Stott. She had the goal roll clearance. The footage from the broadcaster was incredible, how she kept it out, and she was the hero that got them across the line, as well as the 15-year-old scoring the winner. But let's go to yesterday's Big Blue. The contest between Sydney FC and Melbourne Victory at any stage of the season, always something not to miss. But this was an incredible day. Almost 5,000 people at Leichhardt Oval, an amazing atmosphere. And we saw some incredible talking points. I've got to ask you, Yada Wyman, the the penalty, which Rachel Lowe scored to give Melbourne Victory a 2-0 lead. But Yada Wyman lashing out and kicking Alex Chidiak, we all think it was a straight red and that she's extremely lucky to still have an opportunity to play in the semi-finals. What do you think?
Absolutely. I think she got super, super lucky there. She had a little bit of a brain snap there, Jada, and that happens in games. And what people don't understand is it was a high-pressure game. That, you know, it was all on Sydney FC, really. They had to win the premiership, and I think the pressure got to her. And, you know, like all of us, we're only human. She had a bit of a brain snap there and did kick Chids out of frustration. And I think she was really lucky not to get away with a red card there.
And Melbourne Victory went on and got the job done. But let's talk about the finals structure for a moment, because the top two teams, Melbourne City and Sydney FC, are going to have 3 weeks before their next final. What do you think about that? Is that actually, do you think, from a coaching perspective, 3 weeks without a game before you play your next match, is that a advantage or a disadvantage? To me, I think it's a disadvantage.
To be honest, it's a disadvantage, especially when you've got momentum and you're starting to find a little bit of form as well. It's like, what do you do in those 3 weeks? Which I'm sure both teams will be looking to, you know, maybe have a rest this first week and just sort of deload the girls and get them ready, get them freshened up as well. But I guess they'll be playing, you know, whether it be internal games or maybe a couple of games against maybe their boys' teams as well. But I'm guessing they'll keep it internal. But they'll do what they need for the teams to be able to hit their straps come once they have to take the field for their semi-final.
Well, in 2 weeks' time, all eyes will be on the elimination finals. And we have two teams that have absolutely stormed into the finals. One is the Newcastle Jets and Sarita Bolden and Melina Ayres. Something tells me that they've hardly played together through the whole season because of Melina Ayres' injuries. But they have a forward line that could potentially take them the whole way. And the 8 goals they scored against Adelaide, we know Adelaide's having some troubles at the moment, but Newcastle Jets, if I was a punter, you might just have a lazy 50 on them, wouldn't you, Kat?
For sure you would. They've been unbelievable this season. Honestly, it started from I personally believe when Sarita Bolden actually arrived in Newcastle, she gave them an energy that I think she just brings to any team that she goes to. We've seen it last season when she came to the Western Sydney Wanderers. But Sarita Bolden's not only been fantastic for Newcastle Jets, but just fantastic for the league. She just lights up any field that she jumps on. And Melina Ayres, for me, is honestly one of the most talented strikers that we've got in Australia. And if I was Tony Gustafsson, I'd be making sure that we can do everything in our power to sort out her injury crisis and what we need to do to get this girl on the pitch for 90 minutes week in, week out, because she just has an eye for goal. She's just so natural in the way she does things. She comes on and honestly, what she done against Melbourne Victory the week before was just absolutely freakish, and she just makes it look just so, you know, just so natural.
Oh, she has the best goal to games ratio of any of the strikers in the A-League competition at the moment. And I think Teo might have said in a dub zone that he thinks that she's probably the next player that outside Heyman that could score 100 goals in the A-League women's if she was to continue to play here, you know, subject to health and not playing overseas. But, yeah, we're looking forward to see if she can get more than 20 or 30 minutes out of her. Like you said, she's had a horrible run with injury. Let's have a look at Melbourne Victory. They're going to be playing the Central Coast Mariners. And Melbourne Victory, you look at the squad and you think they should be higher up the table based on the talent they have. But I'm going to say something a little bit controversial. I actually think they're a better team without KK, without Callum Knight, than with Callum Knight. We saw on the weekend Alana Murphy, the young Matilda, hold down that number six position and play an incredible match. I just think that sometimes when KK's playing, they don't play as well as when she's not playing.
I think KK just brings a different type of player on the pitch as well. I think Alana and KK are in two different spots in sort of their career, and KK is not one that ventures forward as much. I think Alana Murphy just brings a bit more of that attacking-minded midfielder as well. She likes to get involved with the attack, and I think that young energy as well plays a big part. And I think KK's had, you know, her struggles with injuries and getting back into the league and, you know, finding her feet. But we can't go past, you know, KK's experience and what she brings to the Melbourne Victory team as well. She holds that team together in terms of, you know, everything that she's done on and off the pitch. And it's just been unfortunate that she hasn't really hit those highs of this Liberty A-League.
And Central Coast Mariners, in their very first season, nobody predicted they were going to make the finals. No one at all. And Emily Husband and the team up there have done a great job. We know they're not flush with cash compared to some of their big rivals like Sydney FC and Melbourne Victory. We must give them all the credit for getting this far. And can Kai Simon and that young team of mainly New South Wales NPL players, can she drag them a week further and into the semi-finals?
Why not? Look at what they've done so far. They've made the finals for the first time since coming back into the league. And again, everybody rid them off. But I know the work that Emily Husband and her team had done, you know, behind the scenes before they even, you know, touched a football on the pitch. There was so much work in regards to their recruiting. You know, Ergamol, I think's been a fantastic recruit for them. Kai Simon come in late in the piece, which was great. And, you know, that was taking a gamble as well, knowing that she was injured and she wouldn't come, you know, to be part of the squad until further down the track in the competition, which has sort of worked a treat for them because they've started to find some really good form. And I think structurally, Emily Husband really, really set up the Mariners really well. Like everybody knew their roles and their responsibilities. And you could see that every time the players took the pitch that they were bought into what Emily was trying to produce on the pitch, but they just have this harmony between them. I don't know if you've seen that game where it was at the Mariners' home ground and they all celebrated, all went to the corner, they were rowing the boat. And, you know, that just goes to show, you know, the camaraderie on this team and that togetherness. It's not about having a team of superstars, but, you know, pulling all together and everyone's rowing the boat in the same direction.
Well, they went down to Melbourne early in the season and well and truly gave Melbourne Victory a touch-up. So they'll go down with plenty of confidence. And just a general comment about the evolution of the A-League women's competition this year. Kath, we've seen the league number of games expanded, a full home and away round. We've been calling for that, supporters of the women's game, for many years. That has created a really significant advantage. And I think the crowds this year, obviously we've got the legacy of the Women's World Cup, but on the weekend, almost 5,000 people for Sydney and Melbourne, over 3,000 people up in Brisbane for Brisbane and Canberra. We had over 3,000 people at Adelaide and Newcastle, even though Adelaide had a pretty tough year. The crowds are encouraging. What's your general comments about the evolution of the A-League Women's competition in this edition?
I think it's been fantastic, and I always say this, it's great where we are, but we want to be better every day, you know. We want to make it better and bigger. It's just important that people just keep getting behind the game and keep getting out the game, because that's the only way we're going to grow.
Well, Kath, a cracking final day. Crowds are up. Two very tasty elimination finals to come this weekend, and the most important part of the season still before us. So thank you very much for your time and your insight.
Thank you very much, guys.
Former Matilda, Kath Cannulli there. Stick around on the other side of the break. Jamie Jackson of The Guardian will join us. He was at the Etihad covering Manchester City against Arsenal.
Bop, bop.
Yes, that's that time of the week again. Head to Chemist Warehouse for the biggest brands at the lowest prices. Right now, save on Wagner Health Paracetamol, 500 milligrams, 100 tablets for $4.99. That's a bargain edge.
$4.99 for 100 tablets, Willem.
By Sullivan Chesty Forte, 50 tablets, $11.99.
Oh, Derek, $11.99 for 50 tablets. That'll fix your cough in the wintertime.
Panadol Children's 1 to 5 Year Strawberry 200 mil at $15.49. Still cheap as chips.
Oh, you better get some of that stuff for Derek, because I remember when my kids were little that Panadol 1 to 5 was a godsend when they had the sniffles and the fevers in winters and you wanted to put them to sleep for a couple of hours, Derek.
Yeah, we've got wall-to-wall Panadol in the cupboard. We're using it right now on my little boy who's a bit crook. So we'll be back down to Chemist Warehouse soon.
And you can cover all bases with Zyrtec Hay Fever and Allergy, 70 tablets for $37.99. Remember, Chemist Warehouse is committed to making healthcare more affordable for all Australians. Isn't that right? If you're an Australian pensioner, veteran, or concession card holder, you can save a dollar off your prescription. Excludes brand price premium. Chemist Warehouse, with great savings are every day.
Box to box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse. Great savings every day. And Hoyt's Herbs and Spices. Changing the mood of food.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
The Premier League title remains a race in three after Sunday's fixtures, but with nine to play for the trio in contention, it's still Liverpool in the driver's seat after Manchester City hosted Arsenal in a scoreless draw. Jamie Jackson was at the Etihad for The Guardian. He tweeted mid-match, "Bit of a stinker this," and he joins us now to review it. Jamie, did that remain your consensus at full time?
Yeah, I mean, I also tweeted later on, it was like the dog and duck v the dog and duck. You know, it's like two pub teams. Obviously, taking the mick a little bit because it's two very good teams, but it was a bit of a surprise. I mean, I see City obviously all the time at home and away in Europe. I'll be at the Villa game, for example, on Wednesday, and they played better. I was surprised at Arsenal, to be honest. I mean, afterwards, the big story for me that came out of it really was Arteta saying, okay, you can't be happy with a draw, but at the same time saying, you know, it shows how much progress we've made. Having set up in a way, basically, I thought, to get a point, I thought they were supposed to be the sort of real deal, as in, you know, as good as City attacking. And if you're going to win the title, you have to, I would say, or at least keep it in your hands. They may still win it, of course. You know, you have to go there and at least look to win. Put it another way around, if they'd drawn, if it was the same result, 0-0, for example, or 1-1, but they'd gone out, you know, on the front foot, I think that would be a lot better sign of his thinking, Arteta's. And yeah, the sort of what he wants from his team. So I don't understand what it matters. If they don't win the title this season, what does it matter that they've made progress? Everyone was saying, or he was referring basically to the 4-1 hammering they took from City in the corresponding fixture, you know, in the Etihad last season. But I just don't quite understand. And with regard to City, I mean, you know, I happened to ask Guardiola the question about if Liverpool are favourites, and he sort of said yes. And he is correct, basically, for the same reason, because I think Liverpool are just pulling results out of the bag. City, for me, it's difficult to criticise them because they're still in the shake-up for another treble, right? And you can look very silly criticising Guardiola because he is the real deal, obviously. They're not quite the same team. And if you looked at that game yesterday, as I'm sure we all did, Haaland got next to nothing with regard to chances. He missed one right at the end. I don't know if you recall what I mean. It was sort of at the far post. The ball comes over and he air shot it, actually. He missed the ball completely. But it wasn't like he missed about 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, which I know Salah missed a few for Liverpool in the earlier game, but ended up scoring. So the point is, you create a lot. These top finishers will finish. So City are sort of off the ball a little bit. But yeah, the game itself was pretty drab. I think it was 57 games previously they hadn't scored at home. It's a Sporting Lisbon Champions League game. I think it was like a last 6 years, so 0-0. But, you know, I'm surprised somehow that City did not pull it out of the bag, because I thought they were a far better team than at Arsenal.
It seemed on 70 odd minutes, as they both went to their benches properly, as games do, that the game might sort of crack into life. But short of changing the personnel, neither changed much else. And you sort of touched on this a little bit, but to take it a bit further, like, both are so proud and strident in their method. And the draw didn't favour either, as you said. So why do you think the game stayed in the same rhythm pretty much from go to woe?
Yeah, I mean, I felt like when Doku and Grealish came on for City, they did brighten City up. City didn't play fast enough for me. Now, Guardiola is very canny. He came in afterwards and sort of said he was proud of his team and recognised his team. There's no way he's going to sit there and criticise them, as he has done previously when they need to kick up the what's it. Because there's only a few games to go, and he can't afford to sort of, you know, not get them on the wrong side of him, but sort of do anything that might puncture them more. And that's the point I'm making. Grealish and Doku sort of quickened up the speed of their play. I don't just mean because, you know, Doku's a fast player. I just mean in terms of the passing and the actual movement and the whole team. I mean, you know, for Arsenal, I didn't really see. You know, I think he took off a left back Keogh and brought on another one, Thomas Yasu, brought off a defensive midfielder in Jorginho and brought on Thomas Partey. So it was like for life. There was nothing there saying, right, we're going to go and try and win this or try and, you know, as you basically say, change it up from an Arsenal point of view. I was surprised. I was sitting in the press conference afterwards with Arteta. I'm thinking, again, is this maybe just manager speak to the media and he's saying behind the scenes, but, you know, like we need to do better. But he set them up that way. And a lot of the narrative was, you know, beforehand, so the Arsenal journalist who came up for the game, oh, you know, not because they support them, but, you know, because they follow them, reporting them. So we think at least Arsenal have got a chance this time. I'm thinking, you don't sound very sort of bullish about the messages that Arteta has been giving you. You know, I would have thought Arteta would be saying, look, it's going to be difficult, of course it is, but we're going there to win. But then actually said, now it's time to try and win. So I was very, very surprised. And I think for City, opportunity lost. And, you know, I wrote a piece in The Observer on Sunday previewing this game, in which I very gently suggested that if Arsenal were to come away with a win, you know, we might see a sort of bit of a shift of power. And because a lot of these players now have heard the same messages or, you know, been under Guardiola for so long, De Bruyne, Stones, Edison, Silvers, a few others, might this be the moment, if they were to lose, that this sort of very finely tuned yet precariously balanced machine might start to sort of decline a bit. I think a draw does not feed into that narrative from City's point of view, but I don't know, there's a spark missing. It's an interesting debate, maybe not necessarily now in depth, but there is a school of thought that's, and it's going to sound a bit silly, that Haaland has sort of changed the way they played to such an extent whereby if they're not creating for him, what are they creating? So last season he scored a hatful and they won the treble. That's brilliant, don't get me wrong. That's unbelievable. But this time I was looking at it yesterday, I was thinking, why doesn't he just take Haaland off? It's never happened as far as I can remember. And why would you? I get it. He scored all these goals. But sometimes there's just the odd game where this feeds into your question. Maybe that's what he should have done. Maybe he should have taken off Haaland, brought on Alvarez and played maybe a false nine sort of thing. Maybe it's something I might ask Guardiola on tomorrow when we go for the press conference ahead of the Villa game.
You mentioned Haaland just then, and the key matchup in the game, well, one of them seemed to be Haaland and Gabriel, and it seemed to spill over a little bit at the end of the game. Albeit they ended up sort of shaking hands and smiling. Haaland, of course, is the top goal scorer in the Premier League this season, so it's hard to sort of point out a dip in form. But, you know, was the robust way that Gabriel was playing against him, is that the way to play against him? And have teams sort of worked out a little bit how to crack the Haaland code? Or is it just a case of he's reverting to the mean?
I think there is something in that, especially if the team is not creating, you know, copious chances for him. Because I think what happens then is, he becomes frustrated. He's living off scraps. And so therefore, someone like Gabriel gets into him a bit. I think, you know, that adds to his sort of frustration and, you know, helps to sort of, nullify him. I think there is definitely something in that. But it's very strange to be sitting here. It shows how quickly it could change in football. To be talking about basically a centre forward who's not involved in the Pep Guardiola team other than, you know, if he gets a chance. So you had Aguero, for example, who Guardiola didn't really fancy, but he made him, and Aguero finally sort of buckled down, become like a sort of, not a false nine, but, you know, track back, do all the stuff we associate with. And yet with Haaland, you know, he was isolated really yesterday, I thought, which, you know, if I was to write a piece, about it, analysing, it would probably be this, actually. It would probably be sort of, you know, Haaland is isolated. How has this happened? What can he do about it? Will he do anything about it? He must know it, Guardiola. I mean, nothing gets past him. It really doesn't. Gabriel's ability to deal with Haaland, I think, was a product of the team, the way Arteta set Arsenal up. You know, this sort of low block, everyone behind the ball. And, you know, he was sort of focal point of that with regard to Haaland. This is not a disaster for City, but I'm just, you know, in our job, all of our job, you're always looking for sort of little moments or reasons why, you know, events occur. And they were pretty flat, really. See, even though they were the better team, it was not the sort of. And you know, he will sit there like he might do tomorrow when we see him, as he did yesterday, and say, look, you know, we're never going to run away with the league every time 10 points. I understand that, but I think there's been a lot of games now this season where they've been kind of like that, a sort of a little bit. I was actually looking at it at one point, thinking it reminds me a little bit of Wenger's Arsenal. The big criticism of Wenger's Arsenal post the sort of Invincibles was they were like Barcelona, but without Lionel Messi. So it was all sort of like lots of lovely little passing, but where's the sort of the thrust, the focal point? And City a little bit reminded me of that yesterday. A little bit blunt. You know, Haaland had an injury. De Bruyne's been out for months. I get all that. So you look at it that way, glass half full. They've done unbelievably well. This Haaland thing is going to be interesting going forward. I mean, I'll say all this, he'll probably score about 5 against Villa on Wednesday. And this is the thing with Guardiola's team, you have to be a little bit careful.
Obviously, you mentioned they've got Villa at home next, and then in a few games from now, they've got Real Madrid, which seems it's the pick of the Champions League ties in that quarterfinal. And how do you assess Man City as they go into this final stretch of the season? They'll be fighting on a number of different fronts. You know, do they feel like that they can go again and take out both of these titles? Where do you think they're at?
Yeah, it's a good question. I'm going to Madrid on next Monday for the Tuesday first leg quarter final, and then it feels kind of different to last season in that. Felt like they were flying last season in these games, and they basically took Real Madrid apart, didn't they? I can't remember which leg it was. It might have been the one at home. Real Madrid, I don't know, 7 or 8 points clear out of the La Liga at the moment. They kind of seem like they're flying. So it's kind of a similar, I have a similar view with regard to that. I mean, they've got an FA Cup semi-final against Chelsea. I'll be at that game, and obviously, you know, got Villa. They haven't got either a Liverpool or Arsenal now. Against Real Madrid, I'm going to be interested to see that one because they've had tussles with them. Obviously, 2 years ago in the semi-final, I think they sort of threw it away over there. Quite a mad, the Benzema game, wasn't it, in sort of added time. So I'm not as sure, this time round. It's kind of, well, it sounds a bit silly to say, but are they going to turn up to be the City that they can be? They're just missing an element, a spark. I'm not quite sure what it is. I think it's definitely a product of this Haaland thing. So if he doesn't score, if he don't create lots of chances, then no one else seems to be chipping. You know, if you go back, it used to be Sterling would get 18 in the league, for example, but Maguire would get 25. You know, Mahrez would get double figures in the league, and Aguero would get X amount, or Gundogan. You know, so what I'm saying is there'd be more than one option. You know, I'd have to look up the stats. It might be Alvarez this season. I'm not too sure who the second highest scorer is, which says it all, really, that it's not in the forefront of my mind. Usually, you know, it's sort of such an obvious talking point. I still back them to beat Chelsea. I think if they go out to Real Madrid, it wouldn't be a shock. But I think, again, it'd be a missed opportunity because this team, with the players he has now back, especially De Bruyne looked good, actually, yesterday, which I thought was a plus, considering, you know, he came back from the injury and had a bit of a hitch. You know, he was very powerful towards the end of the game, and I thought that was interesting because that's what, you know, you need from him, really. Shows he's sort of maybe close back to his full fitness. So that, I think that's a massive plus. So I think it's still 60-40. The Champions League, I go 60-40 City. The FA Cup, I think they'll get to the final and probably meet United again because they've got Coventry. They'll probably win that. And the Premier League, I think it's 60-40 against them now.
And Jamie, in addition to your writing at The Guardian and The Observer, your vast and varied works can also be found on your personal Substack account. We've spoken in the past about Because They Can Play Effing Good Football, your works tracking Erik ten Hag's Manchester United and Adventures in Love, non-football related. What else can our listeners strap in for and where can they find it?
Yeah, if you just type Jamie Jackson and Substack into Google, you'll find it. I've just done a four-part sort of mini book on United summer tour of Australia, of America last summer. It's called Vegas is Vegas, baby. They end up in Vegas, obviously. They start off in New York, you know, coast to coast, and yeah, just things like that, really. So yeah, if people are half interested, maybe just sort of take a look. you know, if they fancy it.
Fantastic, Jamie. Thank you very much for your time, mate. Thank you for helping us make a little bit more sense of what was a bit of a sort of stolid and confounding day at the Etihad yesterday. Always good to chat.
Thank you.
Jamie Jackson of The Guardian and The Observer. Stick around. Still a little bit of time left for some World Cup corner.
Willa, willa, willa. Everybody's going to buy Hoyts Spices. Everyone's going to save a dollar or two. Everybody's going to buy Hoyts Spices, yeah.
Willa, willa, willa.
Wella, wella, wella. Do you love flavour-packed meals, Derek? We've established that it is the case, but of course you do.
Always.
Well, look no further than the amazing range of herbs and spices to change the mood of your food from our friends at Hoyts. Come on, give me a bit more. What are you cooking up this week?
Oh, we just had an ottolenghi dish, chicken marbella, and I put in some of Hoyts' big dried bay leaves in there to give it a bit of extra depth and flavour. So literally had a Hoyts jar in my hand today.
He's a weapon, that ottolenghi. Mum loves him. And the flavours of your next meal will just explode in your mouth. Who include Hoyts with his or any other dishes. Remember, you can refill any of your empty spice jars with Hoyts value packs. You'll be happy with Hoyts at Coles, Woolworths, and all good independent supermarkets.
Fill those empty spice jars with Hoyts spices, yeah.
Box to box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse.
Great savings every day.
And Hoyts Herbs and Spices.
Changing the mood of food.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Welcome back. Just about the end of the show, but before we do close Edge, you just wanted to cycle back to the Socceroos and their dual wins over Lebanon, the second full of positive storylines, some fresh shoots here, there and everywhere.
Well, we spoke on off the top of the show, didn't we, about the elite performance of Craig Goodwin, so we won't go there again. But a couple of really interesting storylines that I thought worth reflecting on. One was Patrick Yazbek, who got to debut for the Socceroos. I mean, his parents, born in Lebanon. Very significant day. I saw some images of the parents with a half Lebanese and half Australian shirt, which was just terrific. Fantastic story, that is. And Josh Nisbet, their little man. There's some great photos of in training with him, with Harry Sutter. Obviously, the tall man and the short man. But what a fantastic storyline that is. And we had Mark Jackson on the show. You and Rob interviewed him a couple of weeks ago, Willem, and he talked about Josh Nisbet and just the fantastic nature of the selection. And I noticed there was some fantastic social media. If you want to take a look, listeners, get to the Central Coast Mariners social media feeds on Instagram or Twitter or Facebook, and you'll see the welcome return of Josh Nisbet to his teammates and how much joy that the coaching staff and his teammates got out of his debut for Australia. It was really quite something. And I don't know whether you noticed, Willem, John Iredale and Cassini Yenge's debut goals for the Socceroos, but John Iredale was incredibly emotional, almost in tears when Jackson Irvine embraced him after his goal. It's just amazing what it means to represent your country, especially for some of these players that leave home when they're young, spend a lot of the time away from their families, and the opportunity to make your debut for your country in front of your family is just a wonderful family moment. And I just felt all of those narratives out of the Lebanese matches. And I don't know whether you felt that over in Amsterdam, but I thought it was worth mentioning.
That was a feel-good night. And yeah, Iredale's one who Arnie's had in the back pocket for a while. He had him at Sydney FC, and I didn't realise because he didn't play in the A-League, but he did make his debut in the Australia Cup and then was off to Germany pretty quickly after that. And he himself was pretty sort of self-deprecating. He said he'd seen a few people online saying, "What's a John Iredale?" when he came on for his national team debut. But he said, "You know, I'm a normal bloke. I love my fiance and my dog. I love playing football, and I want to, you know, have a future playing for the green and gold for the people of Oz." So good on him. And yeah, nice goal. And looks a good size. He looks a good all-round striker. Yeah, he looks good.
One of those players we haven't seen in the A-League, so we don't know much about him. We see his name in team sheets and results, but we don't get to see a lot of him. And I think we'll see a lot of him going forward. But make sure you follow him on Twitter. He's quite funny. He's making some really good observations about all sorts of things in his football life.
Okay, I've been looking to get this in for a little while, and I was going to get it into stoppage time, but I couldn't find the audio clip for it. If anyone's seen Will Ferrell's 2005 movie Kicking and Screaming about a soccer coach who goes nuts, it's one of my all-time favourites, and in it there's a big kid called Ambrose and a little kid called Beyondson, and Will Ferrell says you should put the little kid on the big kid's shoulders and create a mega person, and ultimately they do that and score the winning goal. So maybe that's one for Arnie to consider with Sutar and Nisbet. Edge, before we go to Derek, you've got a couple of... I've spent a long time trying to find that clip. I haven't been able to do it, but we will get it in stoppage time in a couple of weeks. Edge, you've got some Matilda's gossip.
Yeah, we understand Hunt is likely having a stress fracture in her foot, which is going to put her in doubt for the Olympic Games. It's a big disaster for Claire, who's been so important in the heart of defence for the Matildas. Katrina Gorry looked a nasty ankle injury. It's going to end her Women's Super League season, and I noticed some very heartfelt comments she made on social media about just having to go back and do the rehab and keep the love for the game and try and get up for the Olympics. So two big injuries for the Matildas to overcome. Courtney Nevin, she hasn't really figured in a starting 11 much, but she's out with a hip injury. We don't know the extent of that. But Gilnick, Winona Heatley, who's playing in Denmark, she gets her opportunity as a central defender to come in. And Shan Fryer from Brisbane Roar, if you had said to me that she would have been one of the players brought into this squad, I would have said, it's an April Fool's joke, but it's not. And congratulations, Shan. It's raised the eyebrows of a lot of people, but obviously Tony Gustafsson and Mel Andretta see something that a lot of other people don't.
Derek, as we come to you, there was some drama this week and there's some ongoing questions as to North Korea's participation in World Cup qualifying. They had requested their qualifier against Japan be played on neutral territory. They were then going to host it in Pyongyang, but pulled the rug with little reason. Or they didn't give any reason, I should say.
Well, apparently the reason is that they didn't want Japanese personnel, players, staff coming into Pyongyang because they were concerned about disease being brought into the country. Which seems bizarre, given that Japan's one of the most developed countries in the world and presumably has a pretty good record on disease control. You suspect there's a bit of realpolitik going on here, that this isn't just about football. You know, no love lost between North Korea and Japan, and history that goes back many, many years, and they are adversaries or de facto adversaries because Japan would obviously always support South Korea in the kind of geopolitical sphere. So clearly there's some funny business going on. You would have thought they would have wanted to play Japan. Now, Japan only just beat them 1-0 in Tokyo, and North Korean football, despite probably all of the issues that it has actually seems to be quite good health, ironically. But yeah, they didn't want to take on the Japanese in Pyongyang, and that was the reason. So Japan take the 3-0 victory and are probably very glad they didn't have to go, if I'm being honest. I'm sure they're very happy staying back in the land of the rising sun, Willem.
I can still remember back in 2010, I went to see Brazil play North Korea in the World Cup, and there was
three... What a goal. Who scored the goal?
Makon. Remember it?
Makon. Yeah, from the touchline.
The byline, yeah, just killed it back in. No one was able to swing that... I think it was Jabalani was the name of the ball, wasn't it? It was like a soccer ball you got from the service station when you were a kid. It was that light. No one could, but Makon was able to bend it with the outside of his foot on the byline. It was incredible. But that three North Korean fans were from the embassy, obviously. And I've never been to a World Cup game where you look around the crowd and you can only count three supporters for the opposition team. That was that night. It's the coldest night in the history of the world, by the way.
The history of the world.
The Ellis Park in a South African winter, I tell you. Right up the top of the stand we were freezing.
There has been a rise in strep cough cases in Japan. Apparently that is something of a concern, but as Paul Williams explained as Paul Williams said on the Asian game, that is probably a bunk excuse considering South Korea had sent 30 players and staff of their own into Japan in pretty recent times. Yeah, good show, gents. Thank you, Derek.
Thanks, guys. Enjoyed it.
See you midweek for stoppage time. And to you, Edge.
Yes, and greetings to the great man, Rob Gilbert, who's taken the week off, which he's entitled to. And I notice he did that when Liverpool go top of the table.
Adam Maloney, thank you to you on the buttons. There's midweek fixtures in the Premier League and A-League to take in before we do regroup for stoppage on Wednesday. In the meantime, thank you to you, the listener, as always, for keeping the show running. A reminder that you can get in touch on Facebook at Box to Box, on X at Box NTS, or through the website boxtobox.com. And please do join us again as our podcasts drop and we go from one end of the pitch to the other in the world game.